As I mentioned, we start out talking about PARP inhibitors, and then we'll move on to talk about checkpoint inhibitors. So let's talk about PARP inhibitors, and want to maybe kind of just get a broad overview of what happens when someone presents with ovarian cancer. And Jenny, this is actually a slide that Shannon used. And I should mention, all four of the faculty have done presentations. We're posting them online this summer. We'll tell you about it. But this is a slide that Shannon put together, Jenny, but I thought it really provides an overview of sort of what direction people can go when they present with ovarian cancer. Can you talk about the typical clinical presentation, Jenny, and then these two routes that patients can take?
Sure. So typically, a patient that presents with a new ovarian cancer is in their mid-60s, you know, newly retired. Unfortunately, it's usually a very slow process in the fact that it can take time for their symptoms to be discovered because they'll go to their PCP and they'll have general complaints such as abdominal distension or some constipation, stuff that we all have from time to time. But as the months go by, it gets worse and worse. And then unfortunately, sometimes they'll end up in the ED or they'll get a CAT scan eventually, and it will show usually advanced cancer at that point.
And often this is confined to the abdomen. So debulking surgery is often considered in that situation. Most patients will either get debulking surgery or they'll get neoadjuvant treatment systemically and then debulking surgery. And after that, often get what I would call adjuvant chemotherapy, Shannon. And now we're talking about a new type of drug, very different than chemotherapy. We're talking about PARP inhibitors. And I'm just kind of curious how you explain. I love this diagram. I know it's very basic, but I'm just curious how you explain to a patient like what PARP inhibitors are and why they're helpful to treat cancer.
Yeah, I like this diagram too. The table, there's one I talk to them about is a train on a track. So the DNA is a little track and you've got your train cooking along. And if you get a break in the track, that PARP is what comes and fixes that track. But if you have an issue where you block that PARP and it can't fix that single, then you collect two breaks. So both parts of the track, both sides of the track are now broken. And that's what we typically would use homologous recombination or this HR repair. So if you've got normal functioning HR repair, no problem. Your cell will repair its DNA and it will be fine. But if you have a defect in your ability to do that double-stranded break repair, that you have a homologous recombination deficiency, then that single strand becomes a double strand. And then that double strand, that double track, train falls off the track because it never gets fixed. And people really seem to understand that. And now we used to just tell that story around BRCA mutation being the reason for homologous recombination deficiency. But now there are a number of different aberrations that can cause that. And so that helps to understand why we're doing all this testing up front, not just for BRCA, but other forms of homologous recombination deficiency.
So Dave, this is another diagram that depicts DNA repair, which is really what PARP is all about, and the single and double-stranded breaking. Do you want to take a crack? It's, again, just at a broad conceptual level. 90% of the time when I see these kinds of diagrams, I don't even understand them, but you can try to make sense of it to me. How does DNA repair work, and why do you get an advantage when you use a PARP inhibitor in cancer?
I've made a career surrounding myself with people much smarter than me. And Shannon Weston is one of those people. She's a wonderful collaborator from going back from years. And I think she just described it perfectly. You have this mechanism of repair, which doesn't work. And when you get that repair, you get the second break, those cells die. So when we look at this and we try to overcome those, what's always challenging for me, Neil, is that how do you then explain we see PARP inhibitors work in these proficient patients. So for me, trying to get through this and really seeing that we have damage, that damage then normally is repaired. When we bring the mechanism into blocking that repair, it doesn't happen and the cell dies. So it's almost a circular argument as we go forward with these from the cells which are deficient in that DNA repair to then blocking that so the cells actually die. And these are cancer cells, so we want them to die.
So, you know, maybe we can start to see how this plays out in terms of clinical research and patient care. Because for all these theoretical mechanisms, the bottom line is if you're giving a new drug to a patient, you want to figure out what are the risks and what are the benefits. And that's really what we're about to separate out. So, you know, the biology, I spent a lot of time talking about, but it relates to the ability of the cell to repair DNA. But more importantly is, okay, we take that theory, and now you have these agents. How do you utilize them? And Shannon, these are some of the major clinical trials that have looked at this question over the last, particularly over the last couple of years, particularly as it relates to PARP inhibitors. On the left, we have an older trial that looked at the use of bevacizumab. We'll talk a little bit about where Bev fits in. But what we're really focusing now is on the newly diagnosed patient, presents with disease in the abdomen, let's say has surgery to debulk it, has chemotherapy, also often carboplatin paclitaxel to reduce the chance of it coming back. And now the question is, can more be done? And we're going to go through the four trials to the right where PARP inhibitors were introduced as maintenance therapy to try to improve the outcome. But Shannon, where were we before PARP inhibitors in terms of outcome for these patients? They had surgery, they get chemotherapy, some of them get bevacizumab. What was the prognosis of patients in that situation before we had PARP inhibitors?
Sure. I mean, basically what we would say is that about 80% of patients with a combination of surgery and chemotherapy would end up getting to the so-called no evidence of disease. And it was really a clinical complete response. So for a proportion of those patients, they probably still had disease that we just couldn't see on imaging. But 80% of them would get to the completion of their therapy and have no evidence of disease and would go on to surveillance. On average, it would take about 18 months to see a recurrence, and we'd see about 70 to 80% of the patients recur depending on their stage, depending on if they had an optimal tumor reductor surgery and other factors. And so clearly we like that early benefit, that early response, but we weren't keeping people alive. Their five-year survival was only about 30%. And so that's why there was a lot of push to look at new maintenance strategy, try to extend that benefit and extend that survival.